few days ago, Rachel contacted me to make sure I was coming, and I knew I was coming tonight. And fortunately, I did remember. And for a moment, Rachel wasn't going to come. I thought, that's good, because I wanted to ding the gong, but also I wanted to introduce myself. And as great a job as Rachel did, I just really want to say, look, I'm Saul, and I've been meditating for 22 years. A bit like going to an AA meeting, you know? One thing I could say about myself is I've been meditating for 22 years and I still haven't got it right. But that's not true. That's not true. And so when I was just on the way here reflecting upon what I might say, I want to do something different. I want to say something different about meditation. I know some people have been coming for a while and they've probably heard it all about, you know, watch the breath and all that kind of stuff. And that's good. That's important. But I want to maybe give a different spin on things, and hopefully what I'm about to say is useful for people who've been meditating for a while and maybe people who are new as well. And the first thing I wanted to do is to go off on a little bit of a tangent and give advice which is about the practice of meditation. But what I want to come around and make a really important point about meditation, which is that there's no such thing as a bad meditation. There is a right way to do meditation, but I mean, there's not just one way, there's a few different ways. But every meditation that we do is a successful meditation. And that might sound like an unusual thing to say. And I'll come back to that point in a moment, because that's really what I want to focus on in just this little period of time before we start meditating, is that every meditation is a successful meditation. Every meditation counts. But I just wanted to talk about the practice of meditation, and this might be a little bit more relevant to those who've been doing it for a little bit of a while. And as I say, I've been doing it for 22 years. And when I say I've been doing it for 22 years, it doesn't mean I've done it every single day in the last 22 years. I mean, I think for quite a while, quite a few years, it would be a case that I'd get into a routine and a habit, and then life would get in the way and I'd fall out of it for a while, and I'd get started, you know, and then I'd suffer and I'd be unhappy again, and then I'd go, I've got to start meditating. So I'd get back into it again. And I did in my early years, I did some things really, really right, and some other things I did just disastrously wrong. And I think one of the things I did disastrously wrong was that I expected myself to get meditation right. I think, you know, we have this idea. And if you sit down, you close your eyes, and your mind goes wild, that's a failure. What's wrong with you? Come on, you're supposed to get peaceful. Okay? And look, I can't emphasize enough that just getting into a daily practice is really, really important. It's really helpful. And it does bring long-term benefits in terms of self-knowledge and happiness. It really does. It's so worthwhile. And if I could just encourage you all to consider the idea of meditating every single day, I think it's a very, very valuable thing. And I can't explain it. I wish I had the words to explain how valuable this is over a period of time. And I'm not saying that every single day you meditate and you just bliss out, it's all great. I'm not saying that's going to happen. It's not. I hope it does, but if it doesn't, that's not the point. The point is that over time you develop an understanding of yourself and your mental habits, your emotional habits. And over time, you know what, look, you don't need to force yourself to be happy. This is a thing in Westerners in particular. You know, it's like, I've got to do this, I've got to achieve this goal. You know, it's our culture, it makes us this way. You know, we've got going through school and then having a career and a family, and I've got to buy a house and go on holiday. And you put pressure on yourself, because in the world, achieving things requires effort and struggle and sacrifice. But in meditation, what works is letting go. It's kind of the opposite. But there is one thing you need to do. And you just need to turn up every day. Okay? And I'm not talking saying turning up and you go to sit down cross-legged for 2 hours and grit your teeth. No, no, no. That's when I started. I thought that. You know, I've read the story about the Buddha and how he sat down under the Bodhi tree on the night of enlightenment, and he vowed that he would never stand up until he got cracked it and got enlightened. And then he did it that night. And I was like, yes. And I, being young and enthusiastic, I thought, yeah, I can do that kind of thing. But I couldn't. I'd just get a headache. And I developed at certain points a bit of an aversion to meditation, and I think that was a bit of a problem for me, an obstacle I had to overcome. But I just really want to encourage you that idea, even if it's just 10 minutes, 10 minutes, at, you know, each day, in the evening, in the morning, whenever you can manage, whenever it's good for you, just 10 minutes. And over time, you'll see the different seasons of your mind. And your mind is naturally inclining to happiness. So all it needs is the direct understanding of the patterns that lead to happiness and the patterns of thought and emotion that lead to unhappiness. When you know that, your mind wants to be happy. But often the reason it goes into emotional states of unhappiness, sadness or anger or whatever is because of our own, well, stupidity really. We can't see what's causing it. But once you've got a direct insight into the patterns that lead to your own unhappiness, my own unhappiness, you go, oh, hang on. Didn't I do that before? And I did this, and I thought that, and then I was unhappy, and then I was angry, and then I was sad, and then I was frustrated. And you understood what led there. And with the mindfulness you develop through meditation, you go, oh, hang on. I'm doing that thing where I go to there and to there and then I end up and I'm miserable. Maybe I won't do that this time. And it becomes natural. It's not something like you need to force yourself to do it. You need to become aware of it. And that's where the daily practice is really, really helpful. Furthermore, you also understand the things that help you to be happy. The mental habits, the emotional habits that develop happiness. And I've developed, not even consciously, I've developed certain little mental habits that lead me to feel uplifted every single day, that lead me to feel happier every single day. And I didn't do that through an enormous willpower or anything like that. I did it through just chipping away and understanding, oh, and I did that and I did that, and that helped me feel uplifted and happy. Oh. And then it becomes a natural habit. It takes time, but it becomes a natural habit. So I really want to just emphasize, if you can manage it, it's really, really useful to develop this practice of meditation, to see those habits of mind, and that will, you will naturally cultivate those which lead you to happiness, and naturally begin avoiding those that lead you to unhappiness. It takes time, but you do get there over time. Okay, I want to return to the theme, and I won't talk for too much longer because I think the most important thing is actually doing the meditation. But my theme being that every meditation is a successful meditation. And I say that it's connected to what I just said about the practice. I mean, I think when I was younger, I probably did avoid meditation, not consciously, when there were two situations. One, when I was really, really miserable, and one when I was really excited and probably a little bit carried away with something, right? So over time I've learned to be a bit more consistent and to understand the seasons of the mind. And I think there's a natural part of all of us. We don't want the unpleasant states of mind, the unpleasant emotions, do we? But actually it's worthwhile meditating when you have those states, and not trying to change it necessarily, trying to be there. There's two qualities in the mind. There's the doing and the knowing. And in life, getting by in life, we have to do a lot of stuff, you know, our job, our family, etc., etc. But in meditation, the most important thing we need to do is know. Put the doer down, put it to one side, and just cultivate that knower inside the mind. And it's that knowing that helps you develop that self-knowledge. And when you, even when you have a, you know, a so-called bad meditation, let's say, you know, you dwell on something which is annoying you, you know, that person at work or that family member, rah, 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 rah. Well, hang on. When you've got that, you bring that into your meditation, and sometimes it's unavoidable, it's the momentum of the mind. But when you've got that state, cultivate this sense of knowing it. Don't take ownership of it and like, it's me, and I must stop this, or, you know, how dare that person? Don't get involved. S take a back seat and go, okay, what's going on? Just watch. Watch and know. Why is that coming up in the mind? And how does it feel? How does it feel? Oh. And that is something quite profound. It's not knowing things via a concept. It's knowing your own mind through direct observation. So it's a much more meaningful type of knowing than this kind of, oh, I read a psychology self-help book and oh, it was good and I had some good ideas there, but they don't really sink in. When you start observing the patterns of your mind and seeing it directly, it's really very meaningful because you go, oh, that's what's happening. So the one thing I want to encourage in all of us tonight is this sense of there being a knower who's a little bit detached, a little bit sitting back, just watching on. Like, you know, if you were to go to a beautiful scene, you know, in the countryside or the beach, and you just sit and you watch. And you notice the birds fly through the sky. Look, there's some grey clouds. But you don't get involved. And that's a way to approach what's going on in your mind. So a lot of the time when meditation is taught, they say, okay, you've got to develop a meditation object. And that's true. That's really, really valuable. But I think even before, in the first stage of meditation, before you go on to focusing your mind on a meditation object, just take that mind to, like, let go. Not like you've been carrying some heavy suitcases around, you're putting down long, like, oh, the relief. And I'm just going to watch. What's going on, the scenery inside my mind? But don't get involved. Just know it. And every so often there might be, you know, a meditation where you're trying to watch the breath, but it's just not happening for one reason or another. If that's happening and you just can't get settled onto fo and focused in your mind, just take that letting go, that just drop it for a while, step back. What's happening? What's happening in this mind right now? Don't think, don't have a conversation with yourself about it. Just watch and watch and just notice and don't judge. And that attitude, that just kind of detached knowing, can lead you to direct knowledge of what's going on inside your mind, emotionally and cognitively. You can just really get a sense of who you are, what's going on, why things are happening. And also, over time, you'll see the patterns that lead to happiness and the patterns that lead to unhappiness. You'll naturally gravitate away from patterns of thinking and emotions that cause unhappiness. You'll naturally go towards patterns that lead to happiness. So I want to just think of that sense of there being a knower, but letting go of the doer. Don't get involved. Just watch. This is meditation time. Just watch. That attitude is really, really valuable. And if you do that a little bit every day, every day, every day, it'll go with you beyond the meditation, you know, period, into your daily life. I'm not saying you'll get it right all the time. There'll be times when you lose your mindfulness and you get really angry or you get really upset or whatever. That'll still happen, but it'll happen a little bit less and a little bit less and a little bit less. And you'll have a greater sense of calmness and just that ability to watch on in life as things are going on around you. Okay. When I was a monk, I'll tell this story just briefly because I think it's a good analogy for what I've just been talking about. There was an American monk who came to stay for a year, and he had quite a reputation, and all the junior monks were quite in awe of him. He was very, very restrained. His conduct was very precise. The way he wore his robe, the way he carried himself, his speech, very, very mindful. but also I think very controlled. He got in trouble with Ajahn Brahm because on his birthday, which was in August, he decided to sit in meditation for 24 hours. Mm. And you think, why did Ajahn Brahm tell him off for that? Because he said, well, you're giving silly ideas to these junior monks. But the interesting thing was, after that, he actually did get some very deep meditation in that retreat. And I knew it even before anyone started, you know, gossiping about it. And that's because I could just see his whole face, everything just loosened up. Everything was very controlled prior. Everything just opened up. Everything was easy, it flowed. And he told me afterwards, he said, oh, he had this mantra that he used. And mantra is like a repetitive saying. He said, you know, his mantra was, relax, it's all out of control. I really like that. I've used that myself, you know. Relax, it's all out of control, you know. Because, you know, when we think things are in control and we try to control them, that's when we tighten up. Okay, well, stop trying to control your mind. If I could tell my younger self, my 22-year younger self, 22 years ago, anything, it would be, relax, it's all out of control. Don't try to control your mind. Try to know your mind. Everything will work itself out from there. Okay? Now, I'm supposed to start meditating in 2 minutes, but, well, I don't think I will give any instructions. I think, relax, it's all I control, yeah. Right? And don't judge yourself. The most important thing is that you just come to know yourself. And, you know, in that knowing, in the moment, there is a calmness that can develop as well. Okay? It's when you try to get involved, when you try to change things, control things, that's when the fight starts to occur. So I will be guiding a meditation, but I'll try and guide it sufficiently so those who are new to meditation have some prompts. I will try and give a little bit more space at the start of this particular meditation. Probably I might leave it for quite a few minutes before we go on to the object. If you've been meditating before and you feel you're calm enough and you want to go on to your meditation object, feel free to do so. I think I might leave that there. And just for those who are new and maybe haven't meditated before, I will try and just give prompts. So just try to flow with it. I will try and direct towards the breath as a meditation object. If your mind gets scattered or doesn't stay with the object, that's okay. The learning process, and just try and come back if you are able. Okay, if you want to get yourselves comfortable, give you a minute to do that. So if you get any niggles or aches, just prepare your body. I'm going to take some time away, not paying too much attention to the body. But for now, just give it a little bit of attention so that it's comfortable and ready for a 30-minute meditation. When you've set your body up, set up your mind as if you're about to take a picnic by yourself. Set things up in your mind so you're comfortable. Sit yourself down in your mind. And just let yourself know that it's meditation time now. All the stuff that you've done today, all the stuff you may need to do later on, it's not time for that. It'll be there when the meditation is over. So let that go for now. Set up a space in your mind, a space where you can just watch the scenery inside. So how do you feel right now? Just know the sensations in the body, the general feeling in the mind, whether it's positive or negative, doesn't matter, just know it. Give all your energy to knowing and watching in your mind. If your mind drifts away thinking about the past or the future, don't try to fix it up. Just know what happened. Gently encourage yourself to come back to knowing. Just come back to watching for a while. Try to notice the space in your mind, the absence of thinking, the absence of doing. And just notice that that in itself is a calming, pleasant thing. Not needing to go anywhere to do anything, just observing that space. place of rest. When you feel your mind is sufficiently calmed down, unwound from the daily grind, direct your attention gently to the sensation of breathing, wherever it occurs to you in your attention. See if you can slow down your mind by noticing the quality of an in-breath and the quality of an out-breath. thinking occurs in your mind, don't get involved. It's just clouds passing through the sky. Be like a passenger. You just need to sit back and observe the scenery. Noticing as one breath comes in and one breath goes out. Noticing the quality of the in-breath and the quality of the out-breath. just be here now. Whatever's been happening in the mind, that's okay. We're without goals and expectations. Our only job is just to be here and know, knowing the present moment. Entering the last phase of the meditation now. Now it's time to let go of the meditation object. Step back. How do you feel? Just know this, the sense inside the mind, the feeling. Positive or negative, and how did it come about, this state of mind you have now? This last phase of the meditation is where we can learn from the experience, not through thinking, but just reflecting upon the experience of meditation that's just passed. Direct experience. The sound of the gong, third beat, fades into nothing. Open your eyes and gently come out of the meditation. I apologize, my timing is a little bit off tonight, but it just means that you can go home and do some more at home. Does anyone have any questions about meditation? In that case, I've been asked to talk about illness and meditation, and I can tell you that I had an unexpected illness last year, and I was very glad that I'd been meditating for a while, because it really did help me during that time and continues to. So I'll just briefly talk about the illness, which for me was a little bit ironic, because I do certain are practices, reflections, which are part of Buddhist practice. You know, they're optional, you don't have to do them. But one of them is to reflect upon death, which might seem like a rather morose thing to do, but I find it really very useful. So anyway, I spend quite a bit of time reflecting upon death. And then the one thing I forgot to reflect upon was illness. So when it came to me, it was quite a surprise. So what happened last year, quite out of the blue, I woke up one morning, it was a regular work day, I work as a teacher, and I thought, oh gosh, I've got a blocked ear. Because you know, sometimes you get a blocked ear, you get that wax in there and you just can't hear properly. It's a bit strange, might have to get the doctor to look at that. And then I went off to work, didn't think too much about it. And then at lunchtime, I started to get really dizzy. Oh, that's strange. The room's starting to spin. That doesn't usually happen. And it's funny, a little bit difficult to walk in a straight line. Well, that's very, very strange. I wonder what's going on there. Maybe I should see a doctor. So the next day it was getting worse. That is, I still felt like I had a blocked ear, but that was the same. But the dizziness was getting much worse. And I went to the doctor and my GP said, oh yes, you've got a virus in your inner ear. It'll probably go away in a few days. Which was interesting advice, and I really clung on to that advice over the coming months. When it didn't go away. In fact, it got worse. To cut a long story short, I will just say that that this does happen occasionally to people. They do get viruses in their inner ear. It was probably a recurrence of shingles, but it didn't occur in any other part of my body. It was just in my inner ear. And it's a very weird, weird illness. Usually when you get ill, you feel sick, like, you know, there's some part of you hurts or you're coughing. And it wasn't like that. But I had lost my hearing permanently, but that was not something that was clear for until another 3 months later, going to hearing specialists, ENT doctors, and so forth, getting my thought I might have a brain tumor at one point, had to get an MRI. So anyway, did all that, but I had a period where I had really particularly bad balance. Now, some people who get these inner ear infections, there's two parts of the inner ear. There's the cochlea, which does the hearing, and then there's the vestibular, what's it called?
Canals.
I forgot what it's called now. I should know what it's called. But that deals with your balance. And for me, about one third of people who get it, and I was one of the unlucky third, it gets blown away. It's gone. For me at the time, the thing that was hardest to deal with was the lack of balance. And to give you an idea, I have never suffered motion sickness, but I suffered motion sickness and I wasn't going anywhere. I was violently vomiting and stuff. And it was weird because I was not moving. I was lying down, spinning around. And that took a long time for my brain to neurologically adjust to this, you know, 40 years with both sides of me balancing properly and all of a sudden gone out the window. So it took a while and the body can adjust. And so I just wanted to give you a background of the illness and to actually say that I've got permanent hearing loss, which causes me some problems, especially you can imagine being a teacher. I can't, when there's background noise, like a bit of chatter, I can't pick a voice even from that far away. I have to go right up close. That's enormously amusing for my students, who can say swear words at me, and until I learn to lip read, I'm not going to actually know. So, so how does this relate to meditation? Is probably one of the reasons we're all here, not to hear my sob story about how terrible this illness was. It helped in a few different ways. In the immediate sense, the sensation I was going through was not one of pain, it was one of a really strong disorientation. I don't know if you've ever been through that, if you've had head spins or anything like that, delirium, you've It was like that, and it was just constant for the first few weeks. And it can be quite, I guess, discouraging. And two things come to mind normally. I think probably quite naturally for us, we think, okay, well, what's gonna happen to me? And then all of a sudden it goes through your mind, all the worst possible scenarios. Oh, I'll never be out of work again. How will I support my family? Oh my gosh. Will I be able to drive a car again? Will I be this? You know, all these kinds of things. And okay, so having been a meditator, remember I spoke earlier about how you can't have a unsuccessful meditation. One thing you get to know is the seasons of your mind. And one of the seasons of your mind is despair. We all go through it from one time or another. We all have that sense of, you know, it's all hopeless. I give up. Oh, it's not going to work. Can't make it work. Or whatever. We've all been through that. But as a meditator, and you've been through that, you go, well, yeah, okay, that's just that state of mind. It's impermanent. It'll pass. You don't, who knows? You know, that's the whole thing. It's uncertain, right? So you just let it go. Let's just see what happens. So as a meditator, I was able to go, okay, this is just an emotional reaction. This is just a season of the mind. This is just a feeling of hopelessness and despair. Don't worry about it. It's just normal. It's a strange thing to kind of say that, isn't it, to yourself, when you're going through that? Because what we do is we get involved in our emotions, right? And especially our negative emotions. But if you can cultivate that sense of being able to step back and go, well, okay, that's just a state of mind, it'll pass. You don't get so caught up in it. So that was one way in which being a meditator helped. But in the immediate sense, it was incredibly difficult to focus, because that sense of spinning around and so forth. But I was able to say, okay, hang on, what can I focus on? And then I realized, actually, I can focus on my body. And I have to say, one of the type of meditation, you know, we often teach breath meditation. That's a very good thing. It's a simple thing. Everyone can do it. It's quite a good type of meditation. But one type of meditation is called body meditation. Now, either you can scan through the body, or you can actually just direct your mind to feel the sensations in a particular part of the body. And that's, it's not something I've done a great deal of, but I have done it in the past, and I thought, hang on, why don't I try that type of meditation? And so I tried, because of the sensation of moving around in my head, that motion was in my up in my head, I said, okay, I'm going to focus on my hands, which might seem a little bit random, but actually it was quite useful. So if I could focus on my hands, sensations in my hands, and just direct my attention there, or into my legs, or another part of my body. And that did help me to stabilize my mind. Okay, because I did try doing the breathing meditation, but at that particular point in time, it wasn't working. Just because of the nature of the condition I was going through. I dare say if you've got a condition where you've got, you know, a problem with your lungs, cough, something like that, maybe if you've got very sore throat when you're breathing, maybe that's not time to do breath meditation. Maybe it's time to do a different type of meditation. So having had a bit of experience, I did try a couple of different things out, and I found for me at that time that focusing on sensations in the body was very useful. And actually this was very useful also when helping to recover my balance, because I had to train my brain to balance using my muscles and my sight. So I'd spoken to the doctor, and he actually said, he didn't actually tell me to do this, he just said, we all naturally use our inner ears to balance, but also our muscles and our sight. I thought, okay, so what I need to do then is I need to compensate. So I began to actually train my mind directly to think about my stance when I stood up and walked around when I was sitting, and by focusing more on the body over a period of time, this didn't happen all at once, this took a few weeks, I was able to recover a sense of balance. And I have to say, balance was not something I had given a great deal of thought to in my life. And when it's, often we don't notice things until they're gone. And when my balance disappeared, I noticed that it was gone. And it was something that I really had to train myself to recover. So on a practical level, training myself using attention skills developed in meditation was something that was a practical benefit. But I think the biggest benefit was actually emotional. And I've mentioned one element of it. I think when we are sick, and almost any kind of illness, I think naturally we're often in a low energy state. We're in a state of mind that probably is on the negative side, let's say. We tend to focus on the negative and, oh, things are going wrong and poor me. Often we feel self-pity. I'm a champion at feeling self-pity. But those things aren't necessarily, those emotional patterns aren't very useful to us at those times. Now, as I've said before, prior to the meditation, we can fight with that, or we can know that it's happening and we can understand it. So at one point very early on, after in the first few days when I was ill, I noticed that these states of playing out all these scenarios in my mind about how things were going to be terrible and going wrong, I all of a sudden I said, hang on, is that true? How do you know? Of course, the truth was I didn't know. I didn't, at that point in time, my diagnosis wasn't clear to my doctors, let alone to me. And of course, I realized that, you know, I've been sick before, and in that sick state, I had enough mindfulness to understand that my emotional state went into a bit of a dive. I think probably most of us have experienced something like that. It's hard to remain upbeat and, or even balanced emotionally when we're feeling sick. And I was thrown off balance, like literally thrown off balance, but thrown off balance emotionally because I didn't expect this kind of illness. You know, we all get the flu, we all have these kinds of things happen to us, but this is something I didn't even know about. So that sense of unknownness, that's the word, that was something that was preying on my mind. And it was starting to play out in these kinds of scenarios of all these things, bad things going to happen and blah, blah, blah. But being mindful, I was able to catch that and say, hang on, what's happening here? Am I going into that downward spin, that emotional downward spin? Okay. And as much as anything, rather than actually, because I've been in the past, I've often said, okay, well, that's wrong. You can't do that. You've got to, you know, fight this, you know, be strong. And I found for myself personally, that doesn't really work for very long. I found personally that a more sustainable solution is to be aware of that state and say, well, hang on. To challenge it a little bit, to say, well, hang on, is that really true? These dark thoughts, are they really the truth? And so to challenge that, and actually you realize they're just thoughts. And they're conditioned. These have an emotionally negative charge to them. Even though you've got these elaborate scenarios, they're negative emotions. They're caused by the state of illness and the uncertainty that they have given rise to. But that doesn't make them true. So knowing the thoughts, knowing the emotions as thoughts, as emotions, and knowing them as impermanent, and for a moment accepting that, that's okay. I think that was really, really helpful. I've also, after that, I was able to start establishing a bit more of a steady state. I mean, I think it was difficult. Like I say, I was very disoriented for several weeks, and so it was difficult at certain times. But I know there's another little trick that I've developed through meditating over a period of time, and that is to embrace whatever's happening. And when I first did this many years ago, when I first tried it, it was very scary. It was very scary. We all like to feel like we're in control, and being able to let go of that sense of control is very, very difficult. Yeah? To allow in, to often, some of us, we experience fear and anxiety from time to time. And one of the techniques I learned to deal with fear and anxiety, not that I'm a master of it, but that I feel like I'm a little bit better than I was before, is to actually say, okay, that elaborate fantasy based on fear and anxiety, what if it were true? Could that be okay? Maybe that's okay. Maybe I can embrace that. I mean, and actually, if you, when you really look at it, some of the things that we're also self-concerned, and often, if we stub our toe, it's a tragedy and that kind of thing. I know that's often the case with me, but when you look at it, it's like, well, actually, it's not that bad. Like the saying goes, first world problems, right? Most of us here have travelled or seen some people who are really, really, really suffering, and you can put things in perspective. But I guess one of the things I try to do is to say, okay, well, what is that worst case scenario? Okay, can I accept that? Bring it on. Can I be okay with that? Yeah, that's okay. Because one of the things that happens when we have illness, particularly when it's an illness or it gives rise to a disability. Okay, so at a certain point, I had to come to terms with the fact that things aren't going to be like the way they were before. My balance is better than it was when I first was ill, but it's not the same as it was before. My hearing's in one ear, it's gone, 100% gone. I don't feel the same as I did before I got this illness. Okay? Now, it's not the worst illness that a person could have, with or leaving with the worst disability that a person could have. But nevertheless, for me, subjectively, I have to deal with something that I didn't expect, didn't ask for, and I can't get back to the way it was before. It's not possible. Can I still be okay with that? Yeah, I can be okay with that. And that's a big step. All of us have to deal with it in some way or another because we're all going to get older. Okay? That's part of the aging process, is being able to just accept that the body isn't going to be as young and fit and healthy as it was before. And that's okay. We can accept that. So it's being able to embrace this new state without that sense of loss. I said to myself, you know what? Because I was a musician, I had a lot of good times, played in bands, listened to all this music, it was great. I said to myself, you know what? I'm lucky I had that good hearing for 40 years. I'm so lucky. So I flipped it around. Rather than saying, oh, woe is me, I've lost my hearing, I'm never going to be, it's quite the same again, and flipped it around. I was so fortunate. And it was funny, because I did that last year, and this year I've just had experiences where I've met, including students of mine who have some really dreadful situations they have to deal with as young people. I have one student, she's going blind, and it really, and I remember how I, for a while there, I felt a little bit sorry for myself, losing my bit of my hearing and so forth, my balance. I thought, well, gee whiz, some people have it really hard. So I can flip it around and say, I'm so fortunate. I'm so fortunate to have made it to the age of, 40, have had good health up for as long as that. To actually reflect with gratitude upon what we do have. And I think, look, honestly, it is such a worthwhile time. That's one of the practices that I try to do every day, is to practice gratitude for what I do have. Because often we, it first of all, it gives rise to a sense of well-being to practice gratitude. But also, it's true. We have so much here in our lives. We're living in this wealthy country at this time where we can, go on the internet and travel the world and do all sorts of things. We're so fortunate. So why don't we feel that way? So one thing that we can do is we can practice gratitude. And it's, you know, perception is plastic. Ultimately, we decide what we choose to see in life. If we choose to see how everything is dysfunctional and broken and wrong and, you know, etc., that's what we'll see. And that will give rise to feelings, generally negative feelings. And if we choose to see that which is beneficial and helpful, and the kindness that others, even the small kindness that others give to us, then that will give rise to a sense of well-being. We choose that. That's up to us. We can't always choose what happens to us, but we can choose how we feel about it. And I think that's a realization that I had. And it's not something that you have all at once and then everything's solved. It's a practice. And so that's something that I'd realized some time ago, but I brought it back up. As I was falling into this kind of emotional ditch, I said, hang on. Is it really that bad? Actually, I've got a lot to be grateful for. I've had so many good friends and family have looked after me. I've got them sick now, and my wife and I had my parents-in-law were staying with us, and they were looking after me. So I said, wow, I'm so lucky, so fortunate. So again, it was up to me. I couldn't choose whether this was going to happen to me or not. It just happened. And this could happen to any of us, right? It's unfortunate illness can strike us at any time. That's the truth. We may not control that, but we can control how we see it. That's up to us. We choose the perceptions. And most people go through life just reacting. But if you're a meditator, you have an awareness that, hang on, all of the states of mind that come through are conditioned. And perception is plastic. It's something which, you know, we choose our perceptions. We train ourselves in our perceptions. And we do that unconsciously up until the point when we start meditating and becoming aware, and then we can consciously start to choose the perceptions that lead to happiness. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah? So I got through this illness. Well, did I get through it? I got through it, yes, but I'm not the same person I was before. But I came through it and I thought, actually, I've learned so much from it. I've learned so much from this illness that I'm actually glad it happened. That's a pretty bizarre thing to say, right? But it's true, because I think in a way, there were things I was taking for granted. And this was a kind of a little bit of a wake-up call. And I spent some time really practicing gratitude towards my family, my wife, people who've looked after me and who look after me every single day. You know, and we can take that for granted sometimes, can't we? And rather than just taking things for granted, I actually had a time to actually look back and go, you know, I've had so many opportunities in life. I've had a lot of good things happen for me. And this little difficult experience that I've had, yeah, well, that's just come to teach me something. And that might sound a bit trite, but I've got to tell you, over the years, you know, I've been involved with the Buddhist Society for 22 years, and I have taught meditation on quite a few occasions, and I've come across people who've really had some pretty heavy suffering, and included in that people who've got cancer, and some of them have recovered, and they've actually said, you know what, this cancer, it's taught me so much. It woke me up. It helped me realize that I was living. It helped me to set me on a new course. And that's a pretty profound thing, you know. And I, as a young fella, and, you know, it's like, oh, that's a nice story. And, you know, and it was. And I was very respectful, and I thanked them, and so on and so forth. And I tried to be supportive and so forth. But it doesn't hit home until it's you, does it? right? And I guess that's what the illness was about for me. You know, I'd heard all these stories, and I thought, oh, that's true. It was there's a little bit of a light went on for me when I heard those stories. And that was useful. So I went, well, I don't want to be dismissive of it. But when it was me, it was time for me to kind of, it was time for me to learn. And I think that ultimately, you know, bad things and illness is going to happen to us, all of us. Okay? Great news, guys. Illness is going to happen. Well, the truth of the matter is, whether that's a bad thing or a good thing is up to us. We will choose whether that's going to be a disaster or a tragedy and so on. Or we will choose whether we can go, wow, you know, this is a challenge, but this is a challenge which, you know, maybe I could learn something out of it. And that, if you can take that attitude, well, I think that's amazing. Because you're not just reacting, you're actively engaging and learning and deepening your experience through choosing to learn from suffering. I'll tell one more quick story, which was when I was an Anagarika. So those who've been coming here for a while will remember the young fellas dressed in white. They're the Anagarikas, and I spent a year doing that prior to becoming a monk. And at the time when I was an Anagarika, there was a few other Anagarikas there in the monastery with me, and none of them had driver's licenses. So I ended up driving the monks around a lot at that time, and that's when I first started coming here. so at one occasion I went with Ajahn Brahm, and we went to see a man who was dying of cancer up in Swanbourne, and he died 2 days after. He was really at death's door when we went to visit him. And I really remember that story because Ajahn, he was having it a few different ways. He'd seen a rabbi and a priest, so he had to go see a Buddhist monk. And, you know, look, he was genuinely wanted to know how to die. Not that, you know, we need any instruction on it, because it's going to happen anyway, right? But he wanted to know how to die well. And so Ajahn Brahm was talking about, at that time, gratitude. Thinking about the good that we've done in our lives. To bring that to mind, you know. And as Ajahn Brahm was talking about, you know, bringing the positive in your life to mind, this man said, he started telling this story, and he was of Anglo background, but he'd grown up in India. And he said, often he saw beggars on the streets. And he said, look, some people would, you know, throw them a coin or step over them or whatever. He said, actually, what he did was he would actually sit down with them, and he'd buy them something to eat and sit down and talk to them and connect. And he was talking about this experience he had in his younger years. And as he talked about that, he began to cry. Tears of joy. He was, because he'd done something good with his life. He was happy that he had done something good with his life. At that time, when he could have been falling into despair, he was uplifted. And that had a very strong impression upon me, because the misfortunes of life, you know, aging, sickness and death, well, they're things we cannot avoid, but we can choose to do good with our lives. That's wonderful, that's amazing, that's uplifting. We can choose to do that. We can choose to do that tonight, tomorrow. That's a very, very encouraging thought. For me personally, that's a very encouraging thought. Okay? Even every single one of us here tonight, you made an effort to try and understand yourself. You looked directly at your mind. You could have been watching TV and flaking out. That would have been easy to do, right? But every single one of you came here, made the effort, okay, and meditating, you know, sometimes it's easy, and sometimes it's a bit of a nuisance, to be honest, isn't it? Because, you know, the mind is churned up, it's disturbed, it's not in a settled, happy state. Sometimes it goes to there, settled, and that's great. Other times it doesn't. And yet every single one of us made that effort. That's a very encouraging thought. We can choose. We choose whether our lives are going to be useful and meaningful, that lead to greater knowledge and greater care and love. Every one of us can choose that. And I guess, ultimately, that's what my illness taught me. Okay. I didn't expect that in the beginning. At the beginning, it was a little bit off-putting, I won't deny. But I was able to say, okay, well, what can I learn from this? And I think I did learn something from it. So hopefully, if you get some unexpected illness, maybe you can remember this. It won't necessarily solve the problem for you, but at least it's a very strong suggestion that within you there is that capacity to choose to see it differently and to think about the good that you've done in your lives and the good that has been done to you, rather than to dwell on the misfortunes. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Well, I might stop there. Were you questions, or do you want me to do?
Yeah?
So, does anyone have any questions?
Just for a couple of minutes.
This is very encouraging because it means that I've been completely clear and understood. Either that, or you think I'm very weird and you can't wait to leave. So, that's encouraging.
Any questions? Any comments? Questions? This is your chance. It's not coming back.
Yes.
Can I ask a very personal question?
You can ask.
Why did you give up being a monk?
Oh, that's what Eric was always saying.
Well, they might be wondering,
yeah.
If I'm asking.
No, that's a fair question. No, look, I don't think there's... I can only give you my answer. I can't give you anyone else's answer, okay?
Yeah.
And the circumstances under which I became a monk... Well, it's a bit of a long story, but I'll try and cut it as quick as I possibly can before Rachel kicks me off. I came into meditation because of a lot of suffering, dealing with depression, and I found over the course of maybe 3 or 4 years, it was very effective, and I really changed my life, and things turned around a great deal. But I also felt that I really wanted to give it my all and, you know, go for gold, so to speak. And so I decided to try out the life of a monk. And when I went there, I made the resolution to stay for 1 year. And I did stay for 1 year. I got to the end of the year and said, well, you know, I think I'll stay for another year. And so I guess my level of faith and commitment at the time wasn't that strong. I just kind of, you know, dragged myself out of depression, decided to give it a shot, and I'm glad I did, to be quite frank and honest with you, but I don't think I had the stability of mind at the time. And I got to the end of the second year and I was not feeling I wasn't feeling content with the way things were. I felt a bit, so I guess, you know, I didn't have the oomph to keep on going at that particular point in time. So I didn't, I mean, I think if anyone's got that ability to make that commitment, but it's I guess at the time I didn't have that commitment, so I'm still working on it. So next time, next time I'll stick at it.
Thank you.
But I'm still here after 22 years, so. Yeah.